As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
The Athletic.
Instead of taking up that gym membership that you wouldn't use even if the gyms were open, how's about subscribing to The Athletic for just £4 a month as a New Year's resolution? You'll get unrivaled football coverage with analysis and in-depth features from the very best writers around, exclusive Q&As with Athletic staff, and ad-free versions of all of The Athletic's podcasts, including this one. Find out more and sign up today at theathletic.com/totally.
Totally Football Show. Never mind the sedition in Washington, here's this edition of the Totally Football Show, with today storming stuff in the League Cup, with Stone Age tactics taking Man City through to the final, capital action in the FA Cup as Plunging Pool returned to the Villa, and we witnessed the biggest David v Goliath ever as 8th tier Marine host Spurs. We ask, are they the most dangerous Marine since Vasquez? Plus, there's Arsenal Newcastle, Phil Neville's future, Milan Juventus, and much, much more in this Totally Football Show in association with Paddy Power. Hello there, listener. It is Thursday, the 7th of January, and off we go with another Totally Show featuring today Duncan Alexander of OptiJoe.
Hello, James.
Dominic Fifield of The Athletic.
Hello, James.
And Karen Carney of Arsenal, Chelsea, England, and the BBC and Leeds social media stream. How are you, Karen?
Good, thank you.
Karen, you're going to be extremely busy this week with the FA Cup, is that right?
Yeah, covering a few games this weekend. So yeah, I am pretty excited actually, but probably not as excited as Birmingham fan. Well, I am a Birmingham fan, but we've got Man City, so I'm not looking forward to that.
Man City, because they're having quite the run of results at the moment, as we'll discuss shortly. Crystal Palace will be in action in the FA Cup third round, of course, as will Wycombe Wanderers, who've made it through to the third round again. Duncan?
Yeah, we beat Oxford in the playoff to start in the third round at Wembley back in July. And finally, here it is, yeah.
Right. So this is the first time that you've actually entered the competition at this point, courtesy of your new role as a Championship team.
Yeah, I mean, obviously for a club like Wycombe, for a long time in non-league, even reaching the first round was a big achievement, and occasionally getting to the third round. So, yeah, just sort of starting the third round is quite glamorous, although we have essentially got the worst sort of tie you can get, which is a home tie against a team in your division who you've recently played. We played them in the FA Cup, Preston, a few years ago. And then obviously Preston have decided to make it even worse this week by signing Ched Evans on loan. So it's not sort of game that's going to leap off the page for the glamour of the third round, I think.
Right, that fixture, leaping off everyone's pages, might just be Marine against Spurs. You can probably empathise with their excitement all the way down in the eighth tier as they host one of the top teams in the Premier League. We'll be having a proper look at Marine and their chances a little bit later on. But of course, there's been cup action already this week. The FA Cup's bitter rivals, the League Cup, pulling a bit of a fast one and staging their semi-finals before the FA Cup third round even gets underway. What happened? A couple of 2-0 wins. Spurs beating Brentford, and then Wednesday night, Man City winning their derby with Man United by the same scoreline, setting up a Spurs-Man City final in April. A Pep against Jose
It's funny because they are the two managers that take this competition really, really seriously. You know, obviously Mourinho used it in his first season at Chelsea to kind of establish himself in the Premier League, and Guardiola's kind of taken the League Cup more seriously than any man has since the 1980s, really. You know, City hardly ever play a weakened team, and yeah, if they win it again, he'll be the first manager to win it 4 years in a row.
All right. They look pretty impressive Wednesday night against Man United, who themselves contributed to a really excellent game. 0-0 at half time. Both teams with plenty of chances, and the open football continued in the second half. What swung this game in Man City's favour, do you think, Karen?
Just a clinical edge for me. I think something a lot of people have said that the last 2 weeks before the Chelsea game, they've started to gel, but for me, I watched them against Southampton. They were definitely starting to build and get stronger over the last couple of weeks. And I just think with that fantastic result against Chelsea, confidence is high, momentum's high. And I just think that they just had the clinical edge. They just took their chances. And, you know, against top teams, the margins are really, really small. And to concede against a set play for Manchester United, that would have been disappointing. And then it's how do you get the ball back and how do you break this team down? And the City is pretty solid defensively now.
Yeah, you mentioned the fact that City's revival goes back before certainly that first half against Chelsea at the weekend. And in fact, when you go back to the defeat they had away at Spurs since that game, that was when in November, I think, they've won 9 matches, drawn 3, lost none, scored 24 and only conceded 3. And John Stones' return, is that fair to call that a massive part of that?
He's been in my dream team the other day. I got criticised for that. Team of the year, I just think, like I said, well, watched him live at Southampton, he was outstanding, and him and Diaz have been rock solid, and it's that saying that kind of clean sheets, goals win your games, but clean sheets win your championships, and they've had to sort that out, and he's just come in there with, he looks re-energised, he looks hungry, and you could tell by his celebration last night, it means something to him. They've got that spark back, Manchester City, and hadn't seen that for quite a while, but they look like they want to be out there. They look hungry.
How important is the fact that him coming in means that Fernandinho, for example, can revert to a midfield role?
I just think, you know, Fernandinho, he's the defensive midfielder, but I think it gives Rodri confidence as well, that when you're always checking your shoulder and you're not comfortable with people behind you or there's an anxiety, it does spread throughout the team. And I think, like I said, they've got the confidence now, and I just like how they're playing as well. They, you know, against Chelsea, they played without really a centre-forward, lots of midfielders. If you look at Zinchenko, I watched him 5 years ago in Holland. He played as an attacking midfielder. You've got Foden, who's in the midfielder. Kevin De Bruyne, who's a midfielder. All playing. He's got so many midfielders, and they just dominate. And they've been a joy to watch over the last month or so for me.
Yeah, I mean, this John Stones' revival is really impressive, but also extraordinary. I don't think I've ever seen a player's form go down so much and then completely bounce back. And, you know, his partnership with Ruben Dias, you know, a lot of centre-halves often do come as pairs. You know, one does some of the stuff, the other one does the other. And I think, you know, John Stones is now looking like the player everyone thought he was going to be a few years ago. 10 clean sheets in 13 games that he's played for City this season. And, you know, that obviously gives confidence to the rest of the team. They kind of managed to pull Fred and McTominay apart quite well last night, and that basically opened up lots of space. And yeah, from looking kind of a bit moribund a month or so ago, they now, you know, arguably probably should be favourites for the title, and certainly favourites to at least pick up one or two trophies this season.
They do look quite ominous, don't they, on the shoulder of Liverpool and Manchester United at the top of the Premier League. You'd be worried if you felt that City were building up a momentum and belief behind you with games in hand as well. And as Duncan says, it was about partnerships. There was one moment, ironically, just after John Stones had been hugely praised by, I think, the pundit or the co-commentator at Old Trafford, where he did actually make a mistake and United got a cross in. And who was it who was basically saving his bacon? It was Ruben Dias diving in the middle, and they're just working well together. When one of them makes a slight error, the other one helps out and eradicates it, and that really bodes well. But the whole unit is clicking, and without a focal point to their front line as well. And I think that's, again, that bodes well for Pep Guardiola. And when you see Foden playing out of his skin, De Bruyne is just a different class to everybody at the moment. Some of the passes that he's conjuring and shots from distance. That shot against the post on Wednesday night was stunning. They look a real force again, and they've really sort of found their, rediscovered their mojo on the quiet, and now look a real threat.
Tom, how much substance is there to these reports of De Bruyne disgruntlement at his contract extension offer?
I suspect it's just another contract extension. There's a contract negotiation, a tactic from his representatives. He'll get the deal. I mean, why would City aren't going to let him go? He's arguably the best midfielder in the world. I mean, you pay him what he deserves and what he merits, and I'm sure they will. I mean, I suppose it's the water's slightly muddied in with their supposed interest in Lionel Messi and what type of contract it would take to bring him to Manchester. But De Bruyne, you go all out and give him whatever he wants because he's just untouchable.
All right. Who are Man City playing next, Karen? Who have they got in the FA Cup this weekend?
They got my team, Birmingham, unfortunately. I'm like, hand on my head with the form that we've got. And then coming up against Manchester City, you're absolutely flying. So I think I'll be keeping my head down the weekend.
All right. Okay. United, meantime, that's their fourth semi-final defeat in a little over a year. Fernandes wasn't able to give them the spark last night. Otherwise, was it just a question of coming up against an excellent Man City defence?
I don't think we can be overly critical of United, particularly on last night's display. I thought they did okay, but they were just up against a far more superior team on the night. A lot has been made of the semi-final choking aspect of it all, and I think that's as many semi-finals lost domestically as Sir Alex Ferguson did over 26 years as manager. But the reality is, City were just brilliant, absolutely brilliant, and I still think United have made great strides in their own way, and their league form is outstanding, and you know, joint top could become top if they win their game in hand. It's completely feasible that they'll maintain momentum on that level. But I mean, they were a bit helpless, rendered helpless last night because City were just so good.
Right. Karen, though, this semi-final choking aspect, is it a real thing that begins to get into players' minds, do you think?
I think you look at the teams where they've played in the semi-final, it's a bit harsh. Dom saying, you're coming up against a City team that are just phenomenal at the moment. But it can creep into your mindset, it can. And it doesn't help people like ourselves keep reiterating it and put it in their faces. But in the dressing room, you'll just go out and you try and do your best, because at the end of the day, Man United were on top form going into this game. They were confident, they were flying. Were they playing the best football? No, but they were getting the job done. And sometimes that's what you need to get into a semi-final, from a semi-final into a final. But I just think it was just a case of, I agree, Man City was probably the worst time for United to play them. And they got beaten by the better side. And they do need to add one or two more players. Maybe with that winning mentality, people that have been there, done it, and have that ruthlessness. And that was the difference last night. Players for City now had to get the job done. And maybe Man United just need those one or two to add to that to help them get to the finals.
Fair enough. What do you think of Spurs' chances against Man City in the final? Obviously, a lot can change between now and April. But Spurs coming off themselves a 2-0 win over Brentford. Slightly harder work for them. Brentford indeed thought they'd equalise, but VAR introduced in the Carabao Cup at this semi-final stage just in time to disallow what would have been the 1-1 for an offside kneecap, or a bit of one, I think.
I thought Brentford performed pretty well. They were a bit tentative at the beginning, but they grew into the game, and they did test Spurs. That was a strong Tottenham lineup, which really paid due respect to a team that even Jose Mourinho at the end of the evening suggested will probably be playing Premier League football next season. And that sums up the quality that Brentford have got. But Tottenham did enough. They scored an absolutely outstanding second goal. Mm. A wonderful through ball by Ndombele and a great run and finish from Son. Sissoko's goal was well taken as well. A lovely little burst into the in between centre halves to head them, put them ahead. I mean, it's great news for Tottenham. It really confirms what we all thought, that Mourinho would give them the platform to win trophies. I mean, he's now got to a final. He's now seeking to emulate what he did at Chelsea back in 2005. I think I'm right in saying it was 2008, the last time that they won a trophy by winning the League Cup, this competition, under Juan de Ramos. I remember covering that when Juan de Ramos's team beat Chelsea, and I think Ramos admitted afterwards that he'd had a drink in the dressing room post-match, a bit of champagne, and he was presumably half-cut when he came into the post-match press conference and told the world that this was going to be the first of a few, because I think he got 2 points from the first 8 games of the following season and was out by October. So hopefully this will not be another full storm for Spurs, and that Mourinho will get them into a rhythm of winning trophies.
Yeah, that 2 points from first 8 games, I've not heard that before. So interesting. Just on the subject of Spurs, Will Ryan, I think echoing the views of many a listener, saying, I was shocked when I listened to Monday's pod to hear you guys say, or the guys that were on then, Kane and Son were the only two stars in the Spurs side. Højbjerg has been unbelievable this season. Check out his stats for the Leeds game alone, says Will. Fair. Very good. Well, a lot can happen between now and April, so not too much point, I guess. I was trying to guess who's going to come out on top when Tottenham take on Man City then, at their old home ground, actually, Wembley. So instead, let's move on to the weekend's games, because coming up, starting Friday indeed, it's one of the great British sporting occasions, the FA Cup third round.
At Paddy Power, we know competition for the remote control can be fierce at the weekends. So, in order to give the non-football-loving occupants of your house something to do, here are some of our top suggestions. Go for a walk. Walk the dog. Walk to the shops. Go cycling. Cycle the dog. Recycle the dog. Just go! All very good options, we say. And that's not the only one. If one leg of your 4-plus-fold acca lets you down, get a free bet on all football leagues and all markets. Paddy Power. Max free bet £10, min odds 1 to 5 on each leg, online exclusive, exclude shop bets, T's and C's apply, 18 plus, begambleaware.org.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This is the Totally Football Show, part of the Athletic Podcast Network. The Athletic is the only place you can read articles by Daniel Taylor, Amy Lawrence, Phil Hay, James Pearce, Ollie Kay, and the very best football writers around.
FA Cup third round coming up starting Friday. 32 matches scheduled, of course. Scheduled being the operative word there. It is a time of mismatches, Milkman on a mission, posties on parade, and lots of patronising as teams from all over the footballing pyramid face off, kind of like football has thrown everyone's keys in a bowl on the table. This year, the FA Cup brings us the biggest mismatch the competition has ever seen in all its long and fruity years. As Marine of the Northern Premier League Division 1, 8th tier of the English game, hosts the Tottenham Hotspurs at their 3,185 capacity Rosset Park Stadium. Marine have only ever reached the third round once before. Can they pull off what would surely be the greatest upset in the history of everything? What a salute the occasion. We've dialed up former Marine ball boy Simon Hughes, now of The Athletic.
58 is Marine. Ooh. Just the second 8th tier side ever to reach the third round.
39.
Tottenham Hotspur. The Premier League leaders out the hat to play Marine. What a tie that is.
Hello, Simon.
Hello.
Ball boy back in the day before it all went wrong.
Yes, I was. I was a ball boy and a mascot.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, it used to be my responsibility to watch where the ball was going when it was kicked into which garden, and run down Jubilee Road and make sure that or Rosset Road, I should say, because it's flanked on both sides with terraced houses, and go and get the balls. And then I became mascot. I did it a few times, actually, on the FA Cup run of 1995-96.
Okay.
Which lasted into the first round when they lost, I don't want to say heroically, because it wasn't heroic, they lost 11-2 to Shrewsbury Town, at which point I was never, ever the mascot again, for understandable reasons.
Okay. For this Sunday's game, is it going to be a similar operation in place in terms of ball boys racing down local streets to to visit gardens?
You know what, right, that's a question I need to ask. Because football's changed quite a bit in the last sort of 15 years, particularly in non-league football. It's not as much kick and rush as it used to be. When I used to do the ball boy role, there was quite a lot of balls that went missing because the ball was constantly in the air. Now, you know, they do try and get it down on the deck a lot more. So I'd be intrigued to know actually whether they do lose more or less. I mean, they're obviously quite expensive. I think they're about 100 quid a pop. So they're obviously keen to make sure that they retrieve as many balls as possible.
Well, indeed. You mentioned the first round that they reached in, I think, 95, you said. The previous best in this competition for Marine, the third round, like this year, in 92-93, when, as you'll no doubt recall, Marine lost 3-1 to Crewe Alexandra. This game here with Spurs, how does it rank in terms of all-time biggest games for this club?
It's the biggest, no doubt about that. I mean, I was at the Crewe game in 1992, a very cold night in January, and they were comprehensively beaten that night, really. And it was. I think had they got through to the next round, they would have played Blackburn Rovers, who were then managed by Kenny Dalglish.
Their manager, Rowley Howard, has a more famous role as Kenny Dalglish's window cleaner, and the snakes and ladders of the cup would have made them opponents, but Marine slid down the snake at Crewe.
That probably would have been a bigger game for a few, obviously, local reasons, Kenny Dalglish being a former Liverpool manager. But this is by far, you know, outstrips any other game. Just in terms of the distance between the two clubs, which has grown wider because Marine actually got relegated a couple of years ago.
This time, the manager is, of course, Neil Young, which is nice because Marine playing Crosby, no? So, but he's a railway manager, is that right? What does that mean?
He works for Merseyrail, and he's basically the site manager for all the different train stops on the Merseyrail network. And in a previous incarnation, when he was at the Chester manager, they actually gave him a year's sabbatical because he was contemplating going full time with Chester. He's a really, really good manager, probably above Marine's level, I would say. He's taken a bit of a drop to come to Marine, and after 18 months of sort of quite a big transition period, because it did involve relegation initially, you know, they're heading in the right direction again now. And I've spent quite a bit of time with them, obviously, the last week and last month, really. And you can see that there's a lot of strategy there. You know, I think there's a perception sometimes with non-league football that it's still quite perhaps amateurish, even though it's obviously a semi-professional level. But that, you know, they're as professional as they can be. And I was at training last night, and they have got a plan for the Tottenham game. They're going to try. There's something that they're going to try. Whether it'll work or not, obviously they'll need a fair amount of luck for it to get anything against Tottenham. But
I'm curious, what is it, beach balls or what?
Well, just in terms of the sort of the tactics, that they're going to possibly change one or two things that they normally do, and they're not just going there just to try and, you know, to make up the numbers and have a nice day out. They are actually going to, I think, try and do something in the game.
Up against Dean Gherkin, is it going to be glory? It is! And Marine caused the biggest FA Cup upset of this year's competition.
Barragan with the free kick. Oh, and Raven was there, and then beyond him a chance. And it's turned into it. It is! Would you believe it? Right at the death! Marine have their big moment.
They do tick a lot of kind of jaunty third round mismatch boxes. We mentioned Neil Young and his railway managing. You've also got a teacher, I think a bin man, and the total wages per week of the entire team is less than £2,000, which is obviously significantly less than Spurs. In terms of finances, though, much like a lot of clubs outside the top tiers, this has been a tremendously worrying time. How important is this cup run? What impact is this going to have, even if it comes to the end of the line with this game, for Marine?
Well, I think it'll change the next 5 years, if not as much as the next 10 years, really, for them. I mean, they're a pretty well-run club, I'd say. You know, they're quite conservatively run, with a small C. And a couple of weeks ago, the manager, Neil Young, signed a new 3.5-year contract, which is unprecedented in non-league terms at that level, I would say. So clearly he knows that there's some funding there to go and try and do better things on the pitch. I've spoken to quite a few people, and the ambition is within the next 5 years to have a sort of a National League financial structure. Whether that'll result in a National League placing is another matter, but there are ambitions to get up the non-league pyramid. And I think what this does is obviously just makes that possibility of that happening a bit greater. The club is in a reasonably good place before this, and that's to the credit of sort of the volunteers on the board who've managed to ensure through quite a rocky period and an uncertain period in non-league football. They've done well to ensure that Marine's sort of long-term financial future was going to be intact. But I would expect over the next couple of years, there'll be an improvement on the pitch for Marine going and hopefully get back up the leagues, because they are quite a historical non-league football club, as you mentioned, that they have had some great FA Cup runs in the past. They've, for a period in the mid-90s, they were probably the best club outside the conference as it was at the time. And I think that's where they need to probably try and get back to, because they've got quite a big following now. The attendances have been good without the FA Cup in the last couple of seasons. And I think non-league football is becoming more popular than it ever has been. The attendances have been really good. So in a normal world, when football fans can go through the turnstiles again, it'd be interesting to see how that sort of popularity manifests itself in the attendances. It's just a shame, obviously, we won't get to test that anytime soon.
No, that's true. The club are running a virtual match ticket scheme, though, to try and raise funds. Well, Simon, one last thing, if I may. There's been an impressive roll call of former greats at Marine. Jason McAteer, Wayne Rooney's uncle, Greg Ruffley, or Bogowski of Guardian Football Weekly as well. Who, oh, well, from the current echelon, should we look out for on Sunday?
Well, when I've seen the games this season, I think one of the big strengths has been actually from the fullback position. They've got a right back called Josh Solomon Davis, who's he was a former athletics. He certainly competed at high level athletics when he was a kid, and he's always a very, very good outlet. And I think in terms of this, the context of this game, I think he'll have to probably play very well for Marine to sort of impress, really, because a lot of the sort of the width and the pace comes from him. So he's one that, you know, they should look out for. And there's another midfielder as well called Josh Hamami, who scored a lot of goals from midfield this season. Very good from set pieces. His free kick led to the opening goal at Colchester, which was put over the line by another player, but it was an excellent free kick. And he's got a reputation for his set piece ability. But they're a pretty, you know, pretty solid outfit, really. There's not many, you wouldn't really look at the team and say there's many weak links at that level, but obviously there's an appreciation for the jump in standard who they're up against here. But yeah, I'd still expect, you know, one or two of them to catch the eye, because you know, I think as I said to you at the start of the conversation, I think non-league football now, that players technically a lot better. A lot of these players have played academy football to a high standard, and have managed to hang in there and still got the confidence and the ambition to play at a really competitive level. So I'd imagine it'd be a back to the wall sort of game, but there will be moments of magic within that, I'd think.
Simon Hughes of The Athletic. There you go, Marine, keeping their heads above water. It's a must-see fixture. Will the subs be important? That's all I got. They've also, I think, been doing well on merchandise, particularly the Spurs fans. Their shirts, I'm excited to say, are going to be sponsored this Sunday by The Athletic. And Jamie Carragher has also chipped in. He's sponsoring their dugouts and their pre-match warm-up tops through his charity, the JC23 Foundation. They're called Marine. I've always been curious, and research indicates that they were named after the hotel on the River Mersey seafront at Waterloo, just north of Liverpool, where their founders congregated to, you know, set them up. That's why they're called Marine.
That's, yeah, a lot of clubs were founded in bars in hotels, if you actually look at the history of football teams, but most chose a different name. So, I mean, for me, I guess Crosby's quite close to Formby, which is the only place in England that still has red squirrels. So you wonder whether Jose Mourinho will be presenting Reguilón with a red squirrel at any point, but probably not.
How are they able to preserve an enclave of the indigenous squirrel?
I'm not sure, but it's...
Is it like Asterix, you know, this one kind of wood? All Britain?
Yeah,
not quite.
No,
one.
It is essentially that. It's the red squirrel wood in Formby. So quite near to Kenny Dalglish's old house, I think. So the window cleaner probably saw one as he was ringing out his squeegee. Anyway, we're digressing somewhat. But yeah, it does take me back to when Wickham were in the non-league, and I remember we got drawn against West Brom and the excitement. And I think this is, you know, football's done really well the last 12 months to cope with everything that's been going on. But FA Cup third round weekend is the one where we'll miss the fans not being there more than any other. I think, you know, the high quality Champions League games or big Premier League clashes, it's not ideal fans not being there, but the games are so good you can kind of look past that. But, you know, Marine playing Tottenham at home and their fans not being able to be there is really sad.
You're listening to the Totally Football Show, sponsored by Paddy Power and part of the Athletic Podcast Network.
All right, rest of the third round. 32 games, I mentioned scheduled, of course, but I don't think we're going to see them all played. One already poised to be postponed, that Southampton's clash with Shrewsbury Town. As many as 10 members currently of the League One side have tested positive for COVID-19. Derby County, in a similar position, they say they're going to field an underage side in their tie with Chorley Town. Unfortunately, we'll probably hear similar tales from some of the other fixtures. But what is due to happen will begin on Friday, or should begin on Friday evening, with a very interesting all-Premier League clash at Villa Park as Aston Villa take on Liverpool. And we all remember what happened last time they went there.
McGinn. Don't think the scoring's over. Should be number seven here. Jack Grealish surely on that. This one, the skipper. Yes! Aston Villa in seventh heaven.
What are the prospects, particularly given Liverpool's very underwhelming form of late, of something similar this time? Karen, you were at Southampton, for example, on Monday when Klopp's side lost 1-0.
Yeah, I mean, it's not like they didn't play well. They just, for me, I was a bit like, they had lots of possession, they had lots of crosses, they just didn't have that spark, which was really bizarre. You know, Mane, Salah, Firmino, just, I don't think Forster had a save to make. And I was waiting for it, and they looked frustrated, they looked a little bit jaded for them. And Southampton were unbelievable. Their intensity, the passing, everything about their performance was brilliant, and they defended really well for the second half. But for Liverpool, they look like they need a few of their players back as soon as possible. They need that spark, and it wasn't there on Monday. And, you know, it's not ideal going to Aston Villa, who are doing really well at the moment and have got someone like Jack Grealish that can open you up when you're playing with two midfielders and your centre-backs.
This, I was asking before about whether Fernandinho moving from the back to midfield kind of changes the whole dimensions of Man City. It's the same true when you take Jordan Henderson out of the midfield and stick him at the back, as Klopp did on Monday.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, some of Liverpool's best performances before they sealed the title last season were with Henderson almost playing as the furthest forward of the midfield three. And he can also shuttle on the right flank and cover Trent quite well as well. So I think it's not that he's bad at centre-half, it's more that they do miss him in midfield. And you know, Liverpool said that they don't think it's likely they'll sign a centre-half in January because it's very hard to do. And, you know, essentially City, and we talked at City earlier, that them and Liverpool have switched around this season, haven't they? Because a year ago, City's defence was in tatters and that was what was costing them. And a year on, it's the other way around. So
is it the defence that's costing them? Or is it, as Karen was saying, that lacking that incision in the final third? They've only had, what, 7 shots on target in their last 3 Premier League games. The last time they looked anything like Liverpool, Dom, you're chuckling right now.
I just thought you were going to say they've only had 7 shots on target in the last 3 games and they were all against Crystal Palace and they all went in.
Right. Well, that was the game prior to this one, run. Yeah. Well,
they basically left all their incision in South London, didn't they? That's the problem. All their ruthless intent was somewhere in Selhurst Park and they haven't had it since. It's been remarkable. But the balance is the key, though, I imagine. As
in what
Karen
way?
Suggests. Well, if you have midfielders filling in at centre-half, then your midfield is lacking and therefore the supply line to your strikers is probably not what it should be.
I think it as well. It's leadership. When, you know, it might sound a bit mad, but Jordan Henderson, for me, I've noticed it for the last 2 years. As soon as he's out of the team, Liverpool are completely different. And even though he's gone back in terms of position, going from centre midfield to centre-back, as a good, intelligent player like he is, he can play that role with his eyes shut. But it's like losing that centrepiece in terms of being able to communicate with his centre forwards. He was trying to communicate to him, but it was just the distances were too big. And you're right, you know, Trent Alexander-Arnold didn't go forward against Southampton. He was really held back. There was only one fullback going forward against Southampton. Because why? Because Jordan Henderson can't fill in. But I think we've got to appreciate how difficult it will be for Liverpool to win the title. You've always got that everyone ups their game when they play the champions. They're not playing again in front of Anfield in terms of fans, which for me is like 10 points for any team. No one ever wants to go to Anfield in front of a full crowd. The times that we're in and the injuries that they've had, if they win it, this will, for me, this will be a better achievement for what they did last season.
Word of appreciation for Southampton, who took the lead barely, 2 minutes in through the returned Danny Ings. How did you judge their performance?
It was a game of two halves for them, really. They looked really strong going forward for the whole of the first half. Liverpool did come out with a purpose in the second half, and they did have a lot of possession and quite a few shots, but as Karen was saying, you know, hardly any of them were on target, and it was just that kind of sterile domination, really. I don't think Southampton really looks in danger at all. Obviously, then we saw Hasenhüttl on his knees weeping, which is always nice to see.
Yeah, that was a surprise, but as you say, quite touching. Karen, did you see him after the final whistle?
Yeah, because we're not too far, and he went straight down and started crying. And I was saying to my presenter, I was like he's literally crying, and it was quite emotional being in the ground as well. But we wasn't aware of why he was upset, so we had to kind of figure out why he was. And I think it was just the pure emotion of kind of digging deep and getting such a result, and against someone that he probably admires, and they do have similar philosophies as well in terms of how they play. But it was, I think, as a player, if I was seeing my manager give the energy that he gives on the side of the pitch and then gives that emotion, I would want to play for him. I'd want to run through a brick wall for him. So for me, that as a player, I was like, wow.
Excellent. Klopp had an emotional moment post-game afterwards too, when he talked about penalties. George B. Livingston asked whether that was his Benitez facts moment. I think that might be a bit of a reach, but he's certainly got some answers to find.
I generally don't buy into fans when they sort of say, oh, the ref was biased against our team, because it's not true. And, you know, these things do even out. But Liverpool were a little harshly treated, I think, in that game. There were a couple of challenges that you wonder why VAR didn't flag up. And so you could see why Klopp was upset. I mean, the penalty thing, you know, United have had a lot of penalties recently, but Liverpool have had the most penalties in Premier League history and have had for almost the entirety of the league. So it's not like Liverpool never get them. And it generally comes in little kind of waves depending on how your team sets up and the players you have available. And, you know, United's team at the moment is very much a sort of team that gets into the box quite a lot with players like Rashford or players like Martial that have the ball and dribble past defenders, so that you are more likely to get a penalty when that happens.
Mm. Villa then coming up on Friday, and 7-2 last time. How much of a full-strength team do you think Jurgen Klopp will field in this game? He doesn't usually in the third round, but given Liverpool's recent form, what, he might want to try and give a bit of a spark to their run of results? Dom?
I suppose he has to balance that. He will know the state of fitness of his players and the schedule that's coming up. But I still suspect that it will be a weakened team. It may well be a weakened team from Villa as well, of course. It's difficult for the managers at this time of year. They've just come off a very, very crammed Christmas programme. There will be a lot of fatigue in the squad. I mean, for example, that front three, without having Jota available to sort of come in and relieve some of the pressure, he's had to lean on those guys for a while, and maybe they're slightly jaded, and maybe that is a contributory factor to their inefficiency in front of goal all of a sudden.
Right. Is Minamino not an option, do you think, for him?
He hasn't featured since Palace, has he? I mean, it's strange, that one, but the implication being that he needs to work harder defensively. He didn't have to that particular afternoon, and he did well. But he clearly is an option, and clearly he needs to adapt quickly if he's going to demonstrate that he's worthy of a place in Klopp's plans.
Villa, meanwhile, for all your talk of them fielding understrength teams, are discussing Ross Barkley being back in the lineup for this game, which would big boost. No, does anyone quite fancy Villa's chances here of making it through?
I think they're excellent at the moment. I know they lost at United narrowly, but they've been superb for a while. Ross Barkley being back is huge, and he'll have his own personal motivation to play against Liverpool. Mm. He was excellent for them in those first few months of the season before the hamstring pinged. And I just think he adds another dimension. He looked like a player that was finding his rhythm again after some stuttering form and opportunities at Chelsea. He just looked a class player in that setup, and very comfortable in the system that Dean Smith had him playing. So I hope he hits the ground running. I hope he continues to thrive, because he's a very, very, very good player, and he hasn't really been seen very much over his time at Chelsea.
Also, the pressure's off Villa, because they've reached a major cup final in every decade from the 1880s onwards, except the 1930s. And obviously, they got to the Carabao Cup final last year. So the 2020s is all done, so they can go out and play with a sense of freedom.
Wow, we all know what that means to a team. Great. That's coming up Friday evening then, 7:45 UK time. What else does the weekend hold? Well, I don't know. What are you guys excited about? For me, Crawley Leeds is one of the standout games, not least for the prospect of the post-game interview with Crawley manager John Yems, who's been on fire of late. This was him after their loss to Millwall.
We decided to play a slightly different formation today with Nadison leading the line. What was the thinking behind this?
Hopefully we'll win the game.
What will we take away from today's performance going into Gillingham on Tuesday?
I don't know.
And this was him after the Exeter City game in October.
Do you think I give a monkeys of what people think of the decisions that we make?
Uh-huh. This rather more recent example of the genre.
The good thing is we ain't going to go around now thinking that we're Charlie Bananas. Mm-hmm. We've got loads and loads of work to do.
John Yems. So Yems v Bielsa, one of the all-time classic matchups. This. Are Crawley a potential banana skin, a Charlie banana skin, if you will?
They're having a great season. I mean, they're doing really, really well. They're punching above their weights. And one of the reasons for that has been their shrewd use of the transfer market. And I don't know whether Max Waters will be playing in this game. He hasn't actually appeared since he was substituted at half-time on Boxing Day against Newport County. But the suggestion is, he may be carrying an injury, but there was a suggestion that he might be on the move this month. And this is a player that was released by Doncaster Rovers in the summer, having spent a proportion of last season out on loan. He only made 5 appearances for Donny, and he went to Dagenham and Bromley on trials over the summer and wasn't taken up. Then went to Maidstone on trial, and they were really impressed with him, and they played him in a pre-season friendly against Crawley, in which he scored and set up another goal. And next thing you know, he signed a contract on a free transfer to join Crawley, much to Maidstone's despair, really. 16 goals and 17 matches later, he's being touted to championship clubs for over £1 million. So that is pretty shrewd recruitment on Crawley's part. He's played a major role in propelling them up the League Two table this season. So I don't know whether he'll be available for the Steve Evans derby or the Harry Kewell derby this weekend or the Sanchez Watt derby, but he's clearly a player that's going to make waves at some point. The Dominic Polian derby.
What's the name again, Dom?
Max Waters.
Okay, right.
Yeah, and I want to mention Danny Bullman, who's very much at the other end of his career. I actually saw his Football League debut for Wickham against Bristol Rovers back in August 1998 when he charged down a back pass and scored with his bum, essentially. It rebounded into the net. He'll be 42 in a couple of weeks, and he's still playing professional football, which is really impressive and pretty unusual.
It certainly is. Very good. Elsewhere in the third round fixtures, Newport taking on Brighton. Newport down in League Two, but they have quite a few giant-killing exploits to their name of late. They knocked Leeds out in round three in 2018. They locked Leicester out in round three last season. They've been most of the season at the top of League Two, but they were overtaken this weekend thanks to a 4-game winless streak.
Fans of old school pitches, Newport have probably got the most kind of boggy, muddy pitch in the Football League. They even have games postponed because of it. So if you're looking for a kind of old style giant killing and on a glue pot pitch, this is possibly the best option to tune into this weekend.
Okay. Brighton, who will be visiting Sunday evening, are without a win in 8 matches. Newport haven't played football since Boxing Day. Hopefully they will be Sunday night. Excellent. What else catches our eye from the third round of the FA Cup? We've got some more intriguing fixtures, including Big Sam back where it all began, and Arsenal Newcastle coming up next.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
You're listening to The Totally Football Show, sponsored by Paddy Power.
Hey, here's Jay Phil with something important. If you had to compile a team of players, asked Jay Phil, who shared the same surname, which name would produce the strongest starting 11? Duncan, we're all looking at you.
Goalkeeper's the most specialist position, so you want a... So I'm going to say Jones, because Jones has got a lot of players in Premier League history, and obviously you've got Paul Jones that can go in goal, and then build from there, really.
That's a very good answer. Excellent. Back to the FA Cup third round then. Arsenal taking on Newcastle. Arsenal the holders, of course. Newcastle, who haven't been the holders of any silverware since 1955. Karen, what's your thoughts about this?
I've watched them in Europe playing with the kids, and I think the kids haven't let him down, and now we've started to play them in the Premier League and started to get results. So hopefully he sticks with them and they get result for the club then in the FA Cup.
Excitingly, Mesut Ozil, it might be escaping from his gilded prison at the Gunners. Talk of him going to possibly a DC United or a Fenerbahce. Interesting. What else catches your eye this week? Well, for example, your teams, Dominic, Duncan and Karen. We mentioned, Karen, the fact that it's Man City for Birmingham. Dom Wolves will be up against Crystal Palace. And I think, Karen, you're going to be attending that one. While Duncan, as you mentioned earlier, it's fellow Championship side Preston. Wow. What about Wolves Crystal Palace, eh? Dom, what on earth has happened with Palace?
I don't know what you mean. We're unbeaten in two.
Are you? Oh, good Lord. Sorry, I've lost track of the narrative. Right, OK, you're unbeaten in two. Well done to you.
Take that, yeah.
Are you dreaming of a cup run?
Well, the last time we were absolutely slaughtered by Liverpool, we got to the final of the FA Cup that season. So, obviously, we'll beat Liverpool 4-3 in the semi-final if they get past Aston Villa on Friday night.
And if you get past Wolves?
Yeah, there is a slight issue of that, yeah.
Right, although Wolves, and this one I do know, have only won one of their last seven games.
They're still pretty good.
Still pretty good. We shall see. Karen, you're going to be going along to Molineux for that.
Yeah, I am. I'm excited, actually. I think two teams in similar boat, a bit inconsistent, both got good squads. I think Wolves need a result. They need to kind of stop the rot a little bit in terms of their results recently and need to figure out and find a way without Jimenez. I know it's stating the obvious, but when you lose someone that gets you that amount of goals and is that consistent for how many years I've had him, it's difficult to try and play without him. But it's another opportunity and against a good Palace side.
Indeed. And your take on Birmingham Man City? I know you did mention this earlier amid much kind of head in handsness.
Yeah, I think it'd be the same. You know, keep my mouth shut because I can't see us getting a result. Keep my head down and pray that it's not, you know, a colossal defeat. But, you know, we haven't won now, I think, in quite a while. So in terms of in the Championship, we wanted the result. And now you're playing against Man City. It's going to be very tough.
All right. It's six games without a win for Aitor Anker's Blues. Blackpool are up against West Brom. Why am I mentioning that one? Well, it's Sam Allardyce back at the first club that he ever was permanent manager at. Does this register with you? In July 1994, he arrived at Blackpool. He broke the club transfer record on defender Andy Morrison, a player he described as a complete nutter. Allardyce was sacked 2 years later by chairman Owen Oyston from a prison cell.
Yeah, this was Allardyce in his early full moustache era. Did okay. Andy Morrison later went on to play for Man City, possibly the heaviest player to ever play in the Premier League. He also once put his tongue into Stan Collymore during a game, which in the COVID era seems... Well, they were, you know, head-to-head in a kind of aggressive scenario, and Collymore claims that Morrison put his tongue in his mouth. So
in his mouth?
Well, I presume it must have been his mouth. He said he put his tongue in me, so... But that seems like a different world now, doesn't it, really?
I think even then it probably seemed like a different world.
No, I think it was pretty de rigueur back in the back in the 90s. So, yeah, I mean, it's a interesting one for Allardyce this time round, a much older, wiser manager, because obviously his start at West Brom has been very bad. And, you know, this is obviously a chance for him to look at other options and hopefully get a kind of moral boosting win. But, yeah, I mean, again, you could imagine Allardyce sort of not wanting a cup run as well, because it would distract from the mission of grinding out the results to come 17th. So, yeah, we'll see what happens.
Well, loads of other fixtures due to be taking place this weekend. Among those that kind of a bit of a maybe, as I mentioned earlier, is the Chorley derby clash. Chorley from National League North against Championship side Derby. Dom.
I mean, Chorley, obviously, that would be a huge, huge upset if they'd beaten a full-strength Derby team. But it would still be a considerable upset if they beat the combination of under-18s and under-23s that are likely to attend the match. But I did like the comment from the manager, Vermiglio, admitting that he didn't actually know that Wayne Rooney was a Derby manager, because he concentrates so much on non-league football that he doesn't actually pay much attention at all to the Premier League or Championship. So, but I mean, he won't be there, obviously, in attendance, but yeah, it's a nice image.
Check back in with us early on Monday for our reaction to all of the games which actually go ahead. Still to come today, we're going to be talking about some of the more intriguing stories from around the wide world of football. Just one or two of those now, actually. Mick McCarthy has been sacked by Apple Nicosia, where he was managing, but only for 2 months. They'd had four defeats in a row, and so have announced they're ending their cooperation with Mick McCarthy. Is this a surprise? Not too much. They've now had 13 permanent managers in 5 years. Wow. In other shop managerial news, who's in discussions to become the new Inter Miami manager? That's right, it is Phil Neville. It's an incongruous pairing, but not necessarily an unsuccessful one. Neville, who's still England women's team manager, but is due to leave that role in July. But he was hoping to take charge, I think, of GB at the Olympic Games this summer, as and when they actually take place. Let's see how it works out. Best of luck to Phil, if indeed he takes that job. Also a salute to Didier Lamkelzee of Rangers Europa League opponents Antwerp, who's currently in want-away limbo. He's so desperate, you may have seen this, to force through a January move to Panathinaikos, that he turned up for Antwerp training this week wearing the shirt of their bitter rivals Anderlecht. Yeah, way to throw down the gauntlet, but they wouldn't have let him in, but I think the point has been made.
Which player was it, James, on the back of the shirt, did you see?
I don't know. Did you know?
Yeah. Yannick Bolasie.
Oh, is that significant?
No, just someone that we knew.
Oh, right. Okay.
He was there on loan, I think, last season.
Do you think he's asked for that shirt specifically, or was it anyone he could find? I don't know.
He's gone into the club shop. He's ordered a Yannick
Bolasie shirt. And they've gone... Yeah, they've gone. He's got a plain one, and then they've gone, do you want a name? He's like, oh yeah, might as well get a name while I'm at it. And spent the extra €10. Yeah.
Karen, from a player's perspective, how unforgivable would that be if you were to see a teammate turn up at training with the jersey of your arch rivals?
I've seen it happen.
Really?
I was at Birmingham, and we signed someone from Aston Villa, and they turned up in Aston Villa kit, and I was fuming. I was proper fuming. I was like, are you sure? I proper went mental, and like no one else seemed to react, and I'm like, at what point do you come to a rival team and wear? I said, there's just I can't say what I said, but I wasn't happy. I was fuming, and I was just like, where's your common sense in that? So that didn't go down well with me, and they didn't start very well.
Was it an act of provocation, do you think, or had they just not been given the right kit yet?
I think they were just like, it was us, women's football, we didn't have any training kit, and or we had didn't they didn't give her any kit for that time. They were like, oh, we'll give it you next week, because we didn't have a lot of money or anything like that. And so she was like, well, I've got no kit. And I'm like, but just come in shorts and T-shirt. Just don't come in Aston Villa kit to Birmingham City. Like, what are you thinking?
Pants and ting.
And it took me quite a while to forgive that player, if I'm brutally honest. Like, I was just like, started just completely on the wrong foot for me at the time. I was just like, nah.
All right.
I was fuming. You can still tell I'm fuming now.
No, yeah, I'm surprised. But, you know, in many ways, full of admiration for your passion on that issue. Not an empty gesture then from Didier Lamkelzee. And we'll see what happens to him and his desire to go to Greece. Very good. We got even bigger stories than those from the world of international football coming up very, very shortly. James Horncastle on the line as well with the huge result midweek in Milan. First, though, let's get odds from Lee Price from Paddy Power.
Hello, listeners. Get ready for some FA Cup magic. So long as you like numbers, betting chat and dad jokes. Otherwise, the skip button's your pal. Third round weekend is traditionally the day of the underdog. Can Marine limit Tottenham to single figures? Can Timo Werner score a goal? Can Chorley beat Derby's youth team? Hang on, which one knows the underdog? Confusing. Picking out cup sets isn't easy work, but a lesser known market could help you here. My old favourite, the double chance, where you bet on what won't happen, i.e. plucky underdog FC to avoid defeat against Premier League millionaires. So, for instance, Rotherham are 21-10 not to lose to Everton, or you can get 8-5 that Boreham Wood do the same against Millwall. Most relegation battlers did the FA Cup like a hole in the head, but at least West Brom should avoid another shellacking. Hey, I said should. It's 12-5 Blackpool beat them, West Brom are evens to win. Similarly, Sheffield United are 4-6 to beat Bristol Rovers, who are 7-2 to cause a shock of sorts. A few more juicy banana skins for you. QPR 11-5 to beat Fulham. Stoke 7-2 to beat Leicester. And Marine, of course Marine, you have to say Marine this weekend, are 70-1 to beat Tottenham. And that would be fun. Bye-bye.
You can find out these odds and more at paddypower.com or the Paddy Power app. Prices are accurate at the time of recording. It's over 18s only. Terms and conditions apply. And when the fun stops, stop. International action. Not sure if you were across this, listener, but Pochettino is in at PSG. He had his first game in charge Wednesday. He was held to a 1-1 draw by another former Saints manager, actually Claude Puel, now at Saint-Étienne. PSG move up to second place, though, because Lille, who were above them, lost to Angers. There was a new manager in at Athletic Club of Bilbao, as we discussed on Tuesday's pod, Marcelino. They lost their opening game 3-2 at home to Barcelona, with Messi scoring a brace and that Messi-Pedri partnership looking once again absolutely excellent. In South America, Copa Libertadores semi-finals. It's a big Brazil-Argentina, or rather Buenos Aires, State of São Paulo clash then going on, because in one it's Boca Juniors against Santos. That finished goalless. The other one on Tuesday, Palmeiras did River Plate 3-0. We'll have the second legs in a week. Could be heading for an all State of São Paulo final. Crikey. While in Italy, huge news. As the top five European leagues lost their last unbeaten side when Milan went down 3-1 at San Siro to Juventus. It's their first defeat in the league in 10 months. And it heralds a return to form, perhaps, for Andrea Pirlo's Signora. Joining us now on the line is James Horncastle. Hey, James.
Hey, James.
James, Juve won 4-1 at the weekend against Udinese already, but you weren't too impressed with that result. What do you feel about this one?
Well, I think they played better, and they needed to, because they risked being knocked out of the title race already. I think if they'd lost this one, because they would have been 13 points behind Milan. So the pressure was on, and I think, you know, while Pirlo and Fabio Paratici, the chief sporting director, kind of projected this aura of calm, players recognised that it was now or never. Dybala and Chiesa were fantastic. They combined for the first two goals, and Chiesa's really come up big in the last two games. He was excellent against Udinese as well. And for 10 or 15 minutes in the first half, he was unplayable and really neutralised one of Milan's biggest threats, which is Theo Hernandez, who I think this season has been the best left-back in the world. I think challenging Andy Robertson for that honour. It wasn't a flawless performance by Juve, by any means. I mean, Szczesny had to make, I think, seven saves. Ramsey Bentancur made a few mistakes. There was that controversy around, a couple of controversies really, whether Milan's equaliser should have stood because there was a foul in the build-up on Rabiot. But equally, Bentancur should have been sent off 20 minutes from time. But I think, as Paolo Maldini said before the game, the stakes were higher for Juventus going into that game. Milan could afford to lose and still be on top of the pile because Inter and Napoli lost earlier in the day. But yeah, I think some signs that things are coming together for Juve. But then again, we've said that after the Barcelona win, and they need some consistency because, as we said on Tuesday's Europod, you know, they've got a big month of Sassuolo, the Derby d'Italia and the Super Cup to come. So they need to put in more performances like the one they did last night if they are to stay in this title race.
Right. Although it was nice from their point of view, the fact that people like Federico Chiesa, who'd had so many doubts attached to his transfer from Fiorentina, should have been so impressive. And the fact that they scored three goals and all of them were without the involvement of Cristiano Ronaldo.
Yeah, Cristiano, I mean, he was very good at the weekend against Udinese, but in this one, he, aside from putting Weston McKennie through, and we should mention McKennie as well, because he's pretty much turned up and every big occasion that they've had so far this season, scored in the Turin Derby, scored in that great goal at the Camp Nou against Barcelona, which was the best win of Pirlo's managerial career. But aside from Ronaldo setting him up for a chance, he was way out wide on the left, more so than usual. Didn't really affect the game, wasn't in the penalty area. But Chiesa, I think to see him now playing on the right, he seems to be really thriving there and seems to just seems to be a really good kid. I mean, that sounds really banal, but when he speaks after the game, seems to have his head on his shoulders. Was speaking last night about, you know, sort of staying back after training and working on shooting with Dybala and Cristiano. And it seems to be paying off with, what, a couple of goals, three goals and an assist in his last two games. So good to see.
All right. Cristiano Ronaldo should mention one of the passes of the season in this game.
Yeah, the one for McKennie. Inside, yeah, it was sensational, really. I think he must have taken out three or four players out on the sidelines. He's still got moments. I suppose, yeah, I mean, he's got 20 goals in all competitions this season for club and country. I think the other thing to point out about last night is that, yeah, Morata wasn't there. Morata's probably been the most compatible partner for Ronaldo this season. And also, Cuadrado's been one of their most consistent players, got more assists than any other player as well. He was ruled out with COVID that morning. But then again, James, I mean, you look at that Milan side, they were decimated and they still played pretty well. This is the thing that keeps coming back to this idea that it's Milan's year. Okay, they lost, but Calabria, the fullback who basically had to play midfield because everybody's injured or suspended, he was the one who scored a goal. He scored a brilliant goal for them to get them back into the game initially as well. So we've got a great title race going on in Italy. Four teams, I think. It's a really fantastic championship that we've got.
Inter only 1 point behind Milan. Roma 4 points off the top themselves and beginning to hit some real form. And Juve now moving up into fourth spot, 7 points off the top, but with a game in hand. Thrilling stuff. James, thank you so much for that update. And we'll catch up with you soon.
Okay.
James Horncastle. Here, James, of course, next Tuesday in the Totally Football Show European edition. That, though, is where we come to the end of today's Cuptastic Totally Show. It's been a barrel of laughs, illuminating and entertaining, I hope, for you, listener, as well. Many, many thanks to Dominic, Karen and Duncan. Anything you want to add before we sign off?
Magic of the Cup.
That's what it's all about. Thank you, Dom. Thank you. And thank you, listener. We'll be back early Monday with all the news and everything that's happened. Do hope you join us then and have a great weekend in the meantime.
You've been listening to The Totally Football Show, part of the Athletic Podcast Network. Keep up to date with everything Totally at thetotallyfootballshow.com and follow us at The Totally Show on Twitter and Insta. Check out all of The Athletic's football podcasts on Apple, Spotify and all the usual places, or listen ad-free on the Athletic app. The Totally Football Show is a Muddy Knees Media production and sponsored by Paddy Power.
The Athletic.